Part of winning the sermon contest at the auction is getting to have lunch with me, which I pay for. And Jason and I had lunch last week, I believe. And I want you to know that just by chance, my daughter and four-month-old grandson, Domenico, dropped in for a visit yesterday at my house. And Domenico is allergic to dairy. And Rebecca has had to cut out all the dairy in her diet, so he doesn't literally have blood in his stool. And she's lost weight, so she's happy about that. And I told her about our conversation and how she's nursing now, and your story about not drinking milk and how it's cow's milk that has the estrogen in it to grow a cow, a little cow into a big cow, and how that's how maybe a piece of why so much of our country is overweight. And she listened with a different ear because of what she's going through with her child, and she was very receptive. And I hope that she will. I'm going to send her all the links of things you've given me, Jason. And I haven't seen what he put back there, but I recommended that he give us at least the top 10 things that we should consider as we think about what we eat every day. And I had to have Jason do this. It's not fair to make you do part of the sermon, is it? If you paid to have me do it, right? But I couldn't in good conscience talk about it because it's not as much a part of my lifestyle. And I do very much know that it is yours and Donna's, and I thought your witness would be really good to hear. So thank you for helping. The story of Ishmael, which some of you may have read a long time ago, is, as I mentioned during the time of all ages, about a gorilla whose thoughts and conversations some people can hear inside their heads. It came out 25 years ago in 1992. Ishmael is a teacher, and he advertises for students who want to save the world. Perfect song, Eric. The book is written in the first person, so we are inside the thoughts of student and author Daniel Quinn for the journey, and we hear his conversations with Ishmael. Now, a gorilla, as you might imagine, has a very different perspective from most of us on the activities and history of humankind. For Ishmael, the rise of so-called civilization is the rise of the takers, all modern people who seek to control the earth, level the forests, and change habitats for the growth of food and pasturing of animals. The agricultural age, which began about 8,000 years ago, sometimes called the dawn of civilization, didn't end but is still going on, Ishmael points out. And it has become a devastating blight. In seminary, one of my toughest justice teachers was Osage Indian George Tinker, who died last year. Tink, as he was widely known, wrote and lectured on what he saw as different world views. I think he would have agreed with Ishmael that the civilized Western and Eastern humans are takers, and that the small tribes of indigenous people still among us are the leavers, people who leave things behind. He once spoke at a Unitarian Universalist ministers gathering, and he looked at me and said, "Jan, do you think there's any chance they'll be able to hear what I'm saying?" He had a bead on us, and he knew that we were not the leavers, that our ministers and our culture are the takers. For me, the most important message that Ishmael makes is that everyone is living out one of those two mythologies, either taker or leaver. Hear that. It is a mythology that we are living within, not a truth. A mythology is a worldview. It may not literally be your belief system, but you are still living out a story taught by our culture. Unless you have worked very hard to free yourself from it. And it's not just about beliefs, but literally about how you live. This may not be fair, but I am going to assume that we are all pretty much takers here, by definition. And that means that deep down, whether you want to admit it or not, most of us believe that we are superior to others, whether they are human or animal. We live within a mythology that says the world belongs to us, for which, if you really think about it, there is absolutely no proof, which means it's a mythology. Our deepest core thoughts, whether we like it or not, are embedded in culture, in a worldview that's a mythology. But we live as though it is truth, that the earth is ours to do with as we like. Whether God made it or not, everything is here for us. We can manipulate it any way we like through our science and technology. And according to Ishmael, we believe this so strongly that we think that ours is the only right way to live. You have a little bit of humbleness right now to admit a little bit that you think you have it right? We have declared this over and over again as Western and Eastern humans spread throughout the world, conquering and converting all peoples to their religions and their ways of life, century after century, through all the civilizations created. We are locked in this worldview, as Tink would say, so much so that we cannot imagine how to change things, but keep bungling along, making similar and even larger mistakes at the expense of the earth and its creatures, including ourselves. Like the narrator of the story, many of us feel utterly hopeless to change anything because we cannot see another story, much less understand that we are living in a story that our culture has created for us. As the white Europeans encountered and began extinguishing the Native Americans of this continent, they came up with the concept of the noble savage, the narrator in the book remembers. The Indians somehow live so close to nature, he says to Ishmael, and so that somehow made them noble. But they were savages because they weren't civilized. They didn't live the right way. And as we know, the savages were never convinced that the white people had the right way. Tink sure was not convinced. Ishmael says that what distinguishes all the indigenous peoples, the leavers, is that they live by the laws of peace. And instead of thinking the world belongs to them, they believe that humans belong to the world, just as all living and non-living things belong to the world. All of these tribes also have a sense of history that goes back to the dawn of time, literally millions of years ago, whereas with the Takers, Ishmael says, you have the sense of a people with a past extending back to 1963. Or sometime since then, since this book was written in 1992. Think how fast our news comes and goes, with every day bringing a new crisis. I have trouble sometimes even remembering what happened 2 years ago. And I also agree with Ishmael that I have hardly any stories that connect me to my ancestors, especially about how to live. Everything seems always to be being made up in this very moment in time, as if it just sprung up like that. The leavers have been experimenting within their individual groups on how to live a life of meaning and purpose for their group for centuries, and have no thought that other tribes or peoples should live like them. Just think of all the different cultures that were here in North America, all the different styles of living. I'm not saying they all got along or anything like that, but they each had their own way of being, and it all had to do with trying to find meaning and purpose in life. And isn't that what we think religion is for? They do not believe that there is a singular right way to live. They have not tried to conquer and subdue the world to meet their needs, because they do not see themselves as owning the world. Like us, their story is not so much about beliefs, but is demonstrated by how they live. Just as what we really believe also is demonstrated by how we live. As Unitarian and naturalist Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, a person will worship something. Have no doubt about that. We may think our tribute is paid in secret in the dark recesses of our hearts, but it will out. That which dominates our imaginations and our thoughts will determine our lives and character. Therefore, it behooves us to be careful what we worship, for what we are worshiping, we are becoming. And whether you know it or not, we are all worshiping something. It takes a spiritual paradigm shift to fight our culture, to be countercultural, truly become countercultural, to go from believing that the world belongs to us to we belong to the world. Lip service is not enough for the concept of interdependence, our seventh principle, that we are but a strand in the web, and that everything we do and others do affects the whole, because we are all part of the same world. We got that from the Native Americans and early pagan traditions. Now, if we really believed that, we would acknowledge at least some kinship with, or at least some respect for, all the other animals, from the wolves to the cattle to the sparrow to the chickens. Trying to practice ethical eating, as Jason recommends, is a spiritual practice based on this countercultural way of thinking, and it's also much healthier. Don't argue with Jason about protein, calcium, vitamin D, or whatever is coming into your head right now. Becoming vegan, which means no meats or dairy, is to break with all the commercial advertising that has taught us to eat the way we do today. Most of you know that pasture animals are responsible for more greenhouse gases than all the world's transportation systems combined. And animals used for milk and meat also consume gallons upon gallons of water, so that it takes 683 gallons of water to produce just 1 gallon of that milk that's meant for cows. And 2,400 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of beef. Our diet and eating habits have an extraordinary effect on the planet, just as all of our me consuming habits affect the earth and all living things. Ishmael says that because we think the world belongs to us, we have not stopped to consider our impact throughout most of our history. When this book was written, the world's booming population was the primary concern of environmentalists. And this came about, according to Ishmael, when humans began farming for more food than they could personally eat within their tribes, so that there was more and more food, and then there was more and more people, which required more and more food, and that has not stopped in what is still a Malthusian nightmare. Our message today for all of us here is simple. Stop it. Just stop it. Stop blindly seeking more and more as if that will make you happy, as if you could possess the world. Experiment with less and less. Imagine eating and buying and using only what you need. Join in movements to change our habits. Elect officials who believe in global warming. Start to listen to the animals around you. Listen to our planet. Try to imagine the laws of peace that would have us live in harmony and balance with one another. never taking something that is not ours to take, or taking more than what we need, which is usually considered a crime. Now I know, and you know, that this is not the so-called way of the world, that the takers have always won so far. Now first, I want you to entertain the notion that that is our culture speaking to you. Where did you get that idea? And remember that the whole ethos is based on a mythology. We are now more clearly living in the times of human as destroyer. So we must start somewhere and teach something new to our children. We must endeavor with everything we have and could possibly do to bring hope back into the world. Because helplessness and hopelessness, which is probably what you might feel after contemplating this, and I know I always do, that will not serve you. It will not serve us. That hopelessness and helplessness will not serve anything or any animal. And I do believe that we can become part of a new ethos, one that joins with all life in that incredible idea of trying to save our world. Amen.